In the Wild West world of podcasting, there is one podcast that is authentic and genuine and continues to stand tall in its originality. Based on a passion for his guests, their work, and his love of podcasting, Derek Thomas and Monday Morning Critic Podcast get amazing, diverse, unique guests found nowhere else. They include Hall of Fame athletes, Academy Award winners, Golden Globe winners, Super Bowl champions, Emmy winners, award-winning authors, award-winning film score composers, directors, trailblazers, pioneers, and inventors. The variety and quality are endless. There is something for everyone. Derek Thomas is the hero you deserve. He's a silent guardian, a watchful protector. Welcome to Monday Morning Critic Podcast. Here is Derek Thomas.
Excuse me, please. If you don't move, your head is going up his ass. Y'all fellas sure you want to ride this train?
Shoot you, asshole.
Did you shove a man's head up another man's ass? We're gonna circle back to that.
This is EP 229 of Monday Morning Critic Podcast. Today's guest is named Dave Matty. Dave stands at 6'10". Belongs to Mensa, which is a society for people with high IQs. His filmography includes Hancock, Better Call Saul, El Camino, Quarry, Reno 911, also known for his stunt work. There's so much to this interview that you're going to really love. The scene that you heard coming in was from the PG-13 movie Hancock. In my opinion, easily one of the top three superhero movies ever made, and it really deserves that recognition. It's really well done. It's funny. It's emotional. It has everything those big Marvel and DC movies have. It's got everything and then some. I really think the show The Boys on Prime, I love it, but I do believe that they kind of took a little bit from Hancock. I think Will Smith was phenomenal in this role, absolutely phenomenal. I'm not going to talk too much longer. If you want to get a hold of me on Facebook, it's Monday Morning Critic Podcast. Instagram is Monday Morning Critic Podcast. My website is www.mmcpodcast.com, and I'm transferring over my Twitter handle. It used to be MDM Critic. I am going to just Derek Thomas for my Twitter handle. Derek Thomas, DarekThomas, Derek Thomas. I really hope you enjoy this interview. A lot of great ones coming up. I have scheduled 10 interviews in 10 days, and I can tell you I'm putting a lot of time in between a newborn and doing research. My life is pretty much cut out for me at this point. So thanks so much for listening. Want to introduce you to the very bright, the very kind Dave Matty. My next guest's filmography includes Hancock, Better Call Saul, El Camino, Quarry, Reno 911, some absolute classic. Please welcome Dave Matty. Dave, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey, Derek, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Dave, so you and I are roughly the same age, right? Are you an 80s kid? Are you all about that 80s life? There's a lot to your life, but as far as the genre, the TV, the movies, the nostalgia, would you consider yourself invested in the 80s?
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, you know, you grew up in, born in Rochester. Yep. Interesting. I mean, I almost feel stupid talking to you about this because your degrees include, and please correct me anytime I'm incorrect here, mechanical engineering, biomedical engineering, computer aided design, patents. So I feel like born in Rochester, RPI would have been a school you would have considered.
RPI was RPI was on the list, but
Virginia Tech is the I want to say the Lion King of schools. I feel like in the category you were looking to achieve in the collegiate atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I knew I wanted to go into biomedical engineering, and they had, I think it was the number three program in the country. And then a family friend sat me down and said, he had gone to Virginia Tech, and he basically said, okay, we're going to talk about why you're going to Virginia Tech. And about 20 minutes later, I was like, I'm going to Virginia Tech. So it was a good good sales pitch, and it turned out he was right on everything he said. So very happy I went there.
So a reach here as a question. What were your safety schools? Was Georgia Tech considered? Were other schools considered? Or was it just were you all in on Virginia Tech?
Well, once I made the decision, I was pretty all in. But I applied to – I had like Hofstra and Clemson and, you know, places like that on my list.
So, Dave, when they say you have, like, when I read a lot of the research I saw, it said you had many patents. So, like, I feel like Shark Tank has tarnished my view on what patents actually are. Like, I will be very upfront with you. I'm not up to date on what patents actually are. Is that – so why is that a good thing? And I get it from the Shark Tank point of view, but from your point of view, why are patents a good thing?
Well, from my personal perspective, they're more of a notch in the belt, because all of my patents came in when I was working for companies. So, the challenge there is that when you're working for a company, they own the rights to the patent. They get first crack at it. And it made sense because they were going to pay for the tooling and all the stuff that was necessary to make the products. But they get first crack at it, and there's a law that says they have to pay the inventor for the patent, for the rights to use the patent. The loophole there is they can pick any amount they want. And so, for example, one of the products that I made that made quite a bit of money for the company, they bought that for $1 because that was their price. One American dollar.
Wow.
And then that they had two divisions in the company, and one of them was basically a tax write-off. And so all the money that would come in from the division I was a part of would go to the other division. And as a result, there was no money around for Christmas bonuses. So we got coffee cups with the company logo on them. So for a product that made the company, I want to say it was multiple million dollars the first year of production. I got $2.29 worth of cash and prizes.
So essentially, Dave, you received what is the equivalent of the Jelly of the Month Club. It's the gift that keeps on giving all year long.
Yes.
Yeah. What wonderful
yes,
for all
exactly.
the hard for all your hard work and intelligence. Yeah, that is unbelievable. And I have to say for those listening, because obviously people aren't privy to the information or research that I did, you know, Mensa is a huge thing. Dave, I'm not quite sure that my IQ is in three digits. So talk about what Mensa is for those listening, what it means, and why it's such an honor to be in such a wonderful thing.
Sure. Well, Mensa is the informally the high IQ society. It's the top 2% of IQs in the world, and wow, it's really good to go blank talking about the smart group you're part of. I get hit in the head a lot. It's a place where people can come together and have discussions about things and work together and network and that sort of thing. And sometimes it's as simple as is my brain bigger than your brain? But there's a lot of fun things that are done and philanthropic things that are done by the organization.
Yeah, and I have to say, I will go. I've got 270 episodes up until this, and then I'll probably go 1,000 more. And I will never, I don't think, meet somebody that is such an interesting and wonderful just body of work from you know, we talk about your collegiate stuff and your mental aspects of things. Let me ask you. So your IQ, has it ever been officially tested, and does that ever change as time goes on? Does that adjust? You know, do you have like a solid number? Or does that change? So, like, say if they gave you an IQ test now versus 10 years from now versus 10 years ago, does that change, Dave?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be fluctuations, and some of that could be, level of focus during the test, or, you know, if you're having a bad day or you're a little sleepy or whatever. So all these little, I mean, it's true of any test you take. You know, you could really ace the material if you know it, but if you're not fully sharp, you know, maybe your essay isn't as eloquent as you'd like it to be or whatever. In the case of the Mensa test, or an IQ test in general, it changes based on a lot of different factors, but it's all sort of roughly in the same ballpark. It shouldn't change a ton over the years. But sometimes it does. If you do something like jump off buildings and hit your head a lot.
And we're going to get to that. And for those listening, Dave is, and I always hate mentioning height to people that are tall because it's like, you've probably heard it more than anything. I mean, Dave is 6'10". He's a stunt man. He's done some wonderful things, and we're certainly going to touch upon all that stuff. And it's pretty amazing, as I said, to go from Mensa to stunt work to, it's just such a wonderful person interview, and I'm so lucky to have you here today, Dave. So I just want to throw some things at you and just help me out with some of these things. So this is some of the topics that I got from researching your life. Racing yachts, NASA, swimming Alcatraz. Yep. And the one that really kind of blew me away, and people are going to be like, are you serious? This is the one? Because I've had actors that have been a part of this, the Royal Shakespeare Company. So, that's very, for those listening, extremely, and have been following me, very prestigious. Touch on anything you want of what I just said.
Wow. I've had sort of a, it's a little bit Forrest Gump when you put it all together like that.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you. I've been fortunate to have what really sort of amounts to a lot of really cool lives in the course of mine, and it was always sort of an evolutionary process as things went along, I found myself I had done a project for NASA, and when the project ended, it was associated with Virginia Tech. And when the project ended, I was like, okay, what do I do now? And ended up up in Connecticut working for a company. And the president of the company liked to race sailboats on the weekends. And there was a Thursday night race every week too. And he said, hey, you want to come crew on a boat? And I was like, sure. I don't know what I'm doing. But I was big and strong, and I could crank a handle really fast and hard. And, that got me, into that sort of thing. And I got asked by other captains on other boats to come crew for them, in different races and different, circumstances. And, it was a ton of fun. And every time we'd go, not every time, but a lot of times when we would go out, somebody would say, hey, Big Dave, you're an engineer. So, you want to know about how the shape of the sail works? And I said, nope. my job is to pull rope hard fast or turn crank hard fast. And that's all I have to do. And I can't mess it up, because if I continue to crank and the person on the end of it, who is actually providing the tension on the rope, on the line, if they stop pulling, my cranking does nothing. So I can't overcrank. I can't mess it up. And I was like, I just want to keep this brainless and simple. And it was a wonderful thing to be able to do, to just sort of turn off the analytical part of my brain and not worry about it and just have fun, doing this, really unique, thing that I got to do.
Yeah. And again, some amazing achievements there, Dave. Two questions that I've been dying to ask you. Your height when it comes to casting, blessing or curse?
It's both. I'm automatically wrong for probably 95% of the parts. Hmm. But the last 5%, it's me and three of my friends.
Right.
So, I know I'm not getting a leading man part. I'm not getting an audition for it, but I'm also not competing with the thousands of people who are right for that part. From my perspective, I think it's been a blessing. I've gotten a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And, I think it's definitely been a benefit to me.
Dave, do they consider when they cast you, all right, do they consider your background? Like, okay, this guy's had a Shakespearean trained background, engineering, a lot of this other thing, many of these other things, the Mensa, do they consider that? Or it's like, is it just more visual? Like, Dave is good. Let's cast him here. I mean, do they consider like the amazing body of work coming into the role, or is it just, you know what, he's right for the part, he looks the part? Or I would like to think that the more reputable people do their homework, but again, I'm on the outside looking in, I know nothing. If you can, Dave.
Yeah, I think I think it's generally a surprise to people. So I don't think people have looked up necessarily my out of the entertainment industry history, but they may look at my the work I've already done in the entertainment industry and say, okay, well, you know, he's done this, this, and this. That might get me in the door, and then, you know, if I do an audition or whatever, you know, that'll get me the gig. And then usually at some point later, someone will be like, hey, did I hear that you're in Mensa or whatever? And people would be like, what? So I would love it if it came up in a part, if somebody, you know, if there was a part for me that was a smart guy. I mean, you know, independent of size, it would be great to, you know, to play a, you know, a computer programmer or somebody, you know, something I've done, something like that, an engineer or something like that. But unfortunately, it hasn't quite happened that way. And back when I was in New York, we had sort of a running joke in my family that if I was on film, I was a monster. If I was on TV, I was either in prison or should have been. And if I was on stage, I could be anything. So I booked a soap opera that I auditioned for, and I called my parents to tell them that I got it. And my dad answered the phone, and I said, hey, I booked that thing I told you about, that thing I auditioned for. And my dad says, oh, let me guess, you're a particle physicist. And I was like, no. And he's like, you're a surgeon. And I was like, no. And he goes, you're an engineer. And I was like, no, Dad, I'm not. And he goes, you're in prison again, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. And not only was I in prison, I was a guy's nightmare. The guy fell asleep in court and had a nightmare about actually going to prison. And I was his nightmare in the dream.
Yeah, and I look at your filmography. Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I'm looking at your filmography. And I've had this explained to me, I want to say easily by actors, directors, 10, 15 different times. And I still don't get it, right? I don't understand uncredited. I've seen movies that you're in, and I've seen you on the television, on the movie screen, whatever we're talking about, and it still goes as uncredited. I have to say, I had a guest, I want to say almost probably a year ago now. He wasn't in the movie, but the director was so kind to him. You know, it was a last-minute cut. He included him in the credits, which makes it, I guess, a difference for a variety of reasons. I don't get it, Dave. Explain it to me, and why is it important or not important?
Well, it's actually not important. There was discussion at some point in the past where if you weren't actually in the credits, then it somehow affected your residuals, but that's not actually how it works. If productions are trying to use that as a way to, you know, like sometimes they'll put NP on the sheet you sign at the end of the day, which means not photographed, and it means nothing, because the contracts we work under, it doesn't say anything about being on film or off. And the easy way to resolve that is if you're doing a stunt gig, if you know, you could be doubling the lead of the movie, or you could be what's called a rigger, the people who are, you know, doing all the setup of the mechanicals and lifting people into the air and climbing up into the trusses to rig stuff. And they're on the same contract. Both those people are on the same contract. So if somehow you didn't get residuals for not being pictured, then the riggers would never get any residuals. And that would be insane, because they're the ones who are physically making sure everybody is safe. And in the terms of the speaking of the stunt side of things, that's where most of the uncredited characters come from. Is if you come in through the stunt door, basically you're hired as a stunt person, or in my case, a lot of times I'm hired as a stunt actor, meaning I'll say a line or two and then get shot or something like that. A lot of times those aren't credited explicitly. You're just in sort of the stunts list, maybe.
Which is kind of ridiculous, Dave, because there's some, I mean, stunts for the most part make movies happen, right? And I almost feel like it's the way people, the right people view it the wrong way, as far as it's like, it's almost like extras get more attention in the IMDb, and it's like the stunt people are the ones who put this, are the glue of the film. And I almost feel like it's a little bit, it drives me insane a little bit. Like, I feel like I had a stuntman on early on, and I feel like they are the glue that bonds many of these films together, Dave.
Sure, absolutely. And it's that's something that, you know, the stunt industry as a whole has been trying to do is, I mean, so let me go back. So back in the day, stunt people would be doubles for the leads. If they weren't actually the leads themselves, they started bringing in stunt doubles to do the risky stuff to protect the actors. As such, they wanted to sort of hide the fact that those people existed. They wanted to continue to propagate the illusion that the actor was doing all this stuff by themselves. And so for a long time, the stunt department was very, very quiet and suppressed and, you know, all this other stuff. But as time has gone on, it's becoming more and more apparent that, you know, some ridiculous stunt that is not done by the actor. And even if it is, it's been rigged and tested thoroughly by a stunt team prior to Tom Cruise, say, getting shackled in to whatever he's doing.
Right.
So there is absolutely no way any production ever, or any insurance company for any production, would let Tom Cruise do a stunt that hadn't been checked, double checked, triple checked, and tested to death by the stunt team. So in the stunt department now, in the entertainment industry, the stunts are trying now to get some recognition, as we should, for all the different things that, you know, the stunt department does. And so we've been trying to get Oscar recognition for a long time. And it's not even like, hey, we want to get up on stage and give a speech. It's the recognition itself. And so everyone's like, no, we could be in the thing the week before. We could do the, you know, it's fine. Just get us in the mix there. Just have an award. And you know, the Motion Picture Academy has continually just not responded. And then you watch every movie that's up for an Oscar. And if they're showing, you know, if it has any action at all, if it's, a Marvel movie, every clip they show is going to be stunts, like every one of them.
Absolutely. And it's ridiculous, Dave, because I'll tell you, if they were ready to cut the category of cinematography, I want to say as soon as 5 years ago. So it's like the fact that they're not recognizing stuntmen or women. I don't know. I feel like, why isn't somebody stepping up? Like, these are you're right. You mentioned Marvel. My God, like everything we've seen on screen that is amazing. I mean, including what's going on now on Disney Plus has been the bond that is glued together by stuntmen, you know, the Falcon movie we're watching now, the Red Witch before that. You know, I don't get it. I have to say, it's just somebody needs to step up and say, you know what, these people need to be recognized.
Yeah.
You know,
and every now and then, you know, certain actors do that. And, you know, there's a thing that producers like to do where they send their lead actors out to do press junkets to promote a movie, and they tell them to say they did their own stunts. And there have been a couple of people, to their credit, who have refused to do that. And they've not said they didn't do their own stunts, but they have danced around the issue sufficiently to make it apparent that that's not how the world works. That's, you know, there absolutely is a stunt team, and they work their buns off and put their lives at risk to make the movie be as cool as it is, and as badass and impressive as it all looks, you know. So you mentioned
Tom Cruise, and you know, we read about how he broke his ankle, you know, in this, you know, Mission Impossible sequence, or there's a variety of things. Is he on the more legitimate side of that, or is and you can answer this any way you want, because I don't want to put you into a hole, but like I feel like before just watching movies, I felt like Cruise was on the more legitimate side of things, but you know, understanding things and learning things. But there's other people you see that say they claim, "Oh, I did my own stunts, I did this and that." And you're like, "There's just no way." Like, there's like the stunt, like you said, the stunt team went through hell trying to make this thing work. Is Cruise kind of, is he a guy that goes all out, or is he in the middle? How does that work?
Well, I haven't worked with him personally yet, but he, first of all, he's very athletic. And I don't doubt, you know, if there's a stunt that is a big marquee stunt that, you know, that he did and they got a really cool shot of it. I believe that he did that. because he's, you know, he's ballsy and he'll do that sort of thing. But
right.
it's sort of the subtle implication that, you know, he just did it on his own. You know, that's the part that grates at me. So, you know, because I know for a fact, and everyone who's in the industry knows for a fact that there's a stunt team that has made sure that Tom Cruise is safe if he is doing a stunt. And they've worked with him and they've trained with him and they've, you know, really, really done a lot. And there are some people who are, you know, like Keanu Reeves does a lot of his own stuff and trains really hard and works, you know, works and just trains and trains and trains with the stunt team. But he also respects the stunt team tremendously.
Right.
And will be the first one to talk about how awesome the stunt team is.
Mm.
And you know, stories about him in the stunt world are nothing but positive.
Wow. Okay.
And then the opposite side of that is, I'm not going to name names here, but it's, there are a lot of people who claim to do their own stunts. And, I was sitting with two stunt doubles of two characters at a premiere of something and was watching the two people that they doubled talk about how they did their own stunts. And, you know, we were sitting there kind of shaking our heads. But it's really, it's a kick in the balls.
Especially
when somebody has literally put their blood, sweat, and tears into a movie. You know, if someone's bleeding on set, odds are good it's a stunt person.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned, there's a great clip of Keanu Reeves. It's a few years old now, but he's at a gun range and, you know, he's not only everything you said, Dave. I feel like he listens to the people you're talking about that matter, right? The people that are in the heart of the stunt. Like, he listens to their advice. Like, what would you do? How do I handle this? Like, he's not like, you know what? I got this. No problem. You know, just go off to the side.
Right.
Like, that's what makes kind of him awesome, right? That's kind of the thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There's that's something that a lot of people need to sort of recalibrate their thinking in that you know, some people think it's better if they know everything. And the reality is, it's way better to admit you don't. It takes more balls, and it's better to have something explained to you and to learn how to do it right, especially in this. I mean, this is especially if we're talking about stunts, than to try to fake it. So for example, one of the things that I always used to say was, if somebody said, "Hey, can you speak with an Eastern Slovakian accent?" I'd be like, "Sure, absolutely." And even if I couldn't, I'd be like, "Yeah, as an actor, totally." And then I'd figure out how to do it. But in the stunt world, if they're like, "Hey, can you do this?" Nope. I would, you know, and every decent stunt person will tell you that, you know, you be straight about what you can and can't do. Because that coordinator who's asking you that question will go, "Okay, good to know." And they will go to somebody else who will make them look good and be safe and do it right. And then they're going to remember me not as, "Oh, the guy who couldn't do something," but they're going to remember me as the guy who was honest about my abilities and passed up a job for safety, for professionalism, you know, to make sure the stunt coordinator looks good, make sure the stunts look good, you know, and to make the product the best it could possibly be. So,
Dave, the stuntman that I had on my show, and I'm going back 4 or 5 years, his name is Buddy Sostan. I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, but like, I just really appreciate everything. What's the one stunt, Dave, that you thought, "Oh my God, this could be a 50-50 call"? Has there ever been like something like that in your career?
There was a stunt, that they were talking about having me do on RIPD that, I was down for. But it was definitely one that was they were talking about having me go off a building, go off the roof of a building on a wire. And the building was 44 stories high, something like that.
Wow.
In downtown Christ. Boston. And it was one where I was like, okay. And it took me a minute, you know, I really thought about it and I was like, well, if I'm on a wire, I can do anything. I'm totally fine on a wire. And then they decided they weren't going to do it. So I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, but yeah, there's, you know, there's always like, there are people who think, like, oh, I could do stunts. I'm fearless. Fearless has got nothing to do with stunts. Fear is what keeps you, makes you dot your I's and cross your T's when you're doing a stunt. If you are not at all afraid of jumping off a building, you are crazy. And crazy is not good to have on a stunt team or in a production. You don't need crazy people around.
Yeah, lots of fearless people on motorcycles too. You know what I'm saying, Dave? Tied to your point. Yeah, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so it's like, you know, there's always a little kernel of, you know, puckerage that that's going to happen before you do anything hairy.
But I feel like this screams a lot about you, Dave, as a person, because, like, okay, you're an established on-screen actor who has the utmost respect and love for this absolutely fantastic profession that we should be respecting. I mean, going back to Eastwood and beyond, like, it's like I said, I don't want to sound redundant, but it has been the glue for many movies. I want to pick apart a couple of the things in your filmography because I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Okay.
The Boys, the movie on the show on Prime in two seasons. I would just like to politely remind them that Hancock had them beat by 8 years. I just want to throw that out there.
Excellent.
Yes. So to pick. So one of the things is I just want to hear, just before I get into the nitty gritty here, your experiences with Will Smith and Peter Berg. So I can never, like, judge from the outside looking in. But if I had to guess, if somebody said, you know what, guess what these people are like, right? Because I feel like if somebody said Matt Damon, good or bad, I said he's got to be a great guy. Tom Hanks, he's got to be a great guy. I have to believe that Will Smith and Peter Berg are great guys.
Yeah, absolutely. They're just a joy to work with. Pete Berg, my first day on set, he directed a scene without speaking. And so he just was sort of grunting and gesturing, and I was like, ooh, this is an interesting way to do it. And then I found out afterwards he was just messing around. He was doing something to amuse himself. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I figured out his sense of humor, and sometimes he would do stuff that was just really goofy and catch people off guard. And, you know, it was once you got his sense of humor, it was fantastic to work with him. And then Will Smith, I mean, he's, you know, he's everything you hope he is. As you know, prior to meeting him, you hope that he's as cool as he is. And he is. There was, when we were shooting Hancock, there was a scene that unfortunately got cut, or shot that got cut from the big hospital fight scene. At the end of the movie where he picks me up as guys are shooting at him, he actually picks me up sideways and he's already thrown the bed at me and knocked me to the ground. Then he picks me up and he throws me into another guy, but through several walls. So I go through several walls and I hit another guy and the two of us slam into a final wall and drop to the ground. And so they cut it. I heard because, it was a little too intense for the PG-13 rating they were going for. But it was a really cool stunt, and I went from 0 to 22.5 feet per second in about 4 feet, and then at the end of it went from 22.5 feet per second to 0 in about 2 feet.
Jesus.
It was four computer controlled winches. I had 12 lines on me, 9 of which were under tension at all times. And so as a result of that, I was I couldn't go anywhere. Once I was rigged up, I was there. And I was sideways, and hanging sideways it's terrible, just in and of itself. But then my rest position, it looked like I was laying on the ground, but I was actually hovering about an inch above the ground. And so it was insanely uncomfortable. And one day I was rigged up. We're ready to shoot it. And I looked down and a couple of shoes appear next to my head, and I looked up and it was Will. And I was like, hey, happy birthday. Cause I had heard, you know, it was his birthday. And he's like, see, Big Dave, that's what I love about you. Your first words out of your mouth are happy birthday and you're chained to the floor. And so we're just talking about stuff. And all of a sudden from behind me, I hear people start to sing happy birthday. And I was like, uh-oh. And now the shape of the set we were in is kind of like a big triangle. And I was up at one of the points of the triangle facing the point. So in front of me, there's about 15 feet and some chairs and a wall and nothing else. And so all this stuff is happening behind me and I can't see it. I can't see any of it. And they come in and they've got cake and they're singing happy birthday and they start giving speeches and they go through all the, you know, the different producers and Pete said something. And then they wanted Will to give a speech and he, you know, got up and he said, yeah, I really appreciate it. And I love the singing and everyone, you know, the speeches and the cake and everything. And I got to say, it's the best thing in the world to be making a movie on your birthday. But I feel a little bad because we're all over here having a really good time and Big Dave's chained to the floor. And, so the behind the scenes video guys came running over to me and I'm like all by myself going, happy birthday. Did I miss it? And so Will said, Big Dave should have the first piece of cake. And so he cuts a piece of cake and brings it over to me.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah. And then Pete Berg, being a smartass with a funny sense of humor, said, no, you did it wrong. And he starts pulling the cake away from me, like out of my reach. And I can't move. And I'm like, where are you taking? No, don't do that. And he's just sliding it along the floor. And I was like, no, that's not cool. And finally, Will was like, come on, that's not. And Will picks up the plate and then he feeds me the cake himself. He sat there and fed me birthday cake.
Oh, that is awesome.
And yeah, and both of those guys are absolutely amazing. And if either one of them wanted to work with me again, I would be there in a heartbeat. And I got to work with Will again on Bright a few years ago.
That's right.
And it was great. We just sort of picked up where we left off, and it was a blast.
Ironically enough, Will has the same birthday as Christopher Reeves, which I think is appropriate. Not the same year, but the same date and day, which is unbelievable. You talked about the PG-13 rating. There was something else I read where there was another scene they were going for that was definitely a hard R, and I'm kind of glad that they.
I think I know which scene you're talking about.
Yeah. So
was it in the trailer?
Yeah. And I have to say this too. You know, people talk Marvel, DC. I often feel, Dave, that Hancock is immensely neglected. I've seen everything, and I mean everything. And Hancock, for me, is in my top three superhero movies. I really feel like it is supremely underrated, but it doesn't have that, you know, quote-unquote Marvel, quote-unquote DC backing. But I got to say, it's as good as anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was so much fun to work on, and, it was a blast. You know, it was just a hoot. And then, you know, when it was over, we had this massive rap party, which Will actually was heavily involved with putting it together. And so, and my wife is a huge Will Smith fan. And this is another example of the sense of humor of these guys. We were about to get started one morning, and we're just kind of shooting the shit. And I said to him, "Hey, Will, I got to tell you, by the way, my wife is a huge fan." And he was like, "Oh, thanks." And I said, "Me, not so much." and both he and Pete just started laughing. And, it's like, they're good people. So the rap party comes around and my wife was like super excited to go. And she was just hoping that, you know, maybe she could meet him or say hi or wave across the room or whatever. And, so at one point Will gets up on the stage and he's talking about, he's thanking everybody and saying all this really nice stuff. And then he basically turns over the entertainment to everyone in the hip hop scene from the late 80s and early 90s who has come to perform at this rap party for Will. It was the entertainment list was absolutely insane. And so he finishes his thing and he goes, "Well, I'm not up here to talk. I want to dance. So enjoy the party." And he jumps off the stage onto the dance floor. And my wife grabs my hand and says, "I have to be able to say I was on the same dance floor as Will Smith." And I was like, "All right." And so she kind of drags me up to the dance floor and I'm in the, you know, we're sort of at the back, we're at the back end of the dance floor and, you know, Will's way up at the front. Well, Will's 6'3". So he's a relatively tall guy.
Yeah.
And, I knew what was going to happen and, it eventually happened and I was watching my wife's face as it happened. And what had happened was Will had turned around and saw me at the back of the pack. And every day when he would walk onto set, when he'd see me, he'd go, "Big Dave!" And so I see him do that. I can't hear him because it's a, you know, there's music blaring and people dancing and everything else. And he starts working his way through the crowd to come say hi. And I'm watching my wife, and all she can see is sort of the crowd's kind of bubbling in some, you know, in a weird way. And all of a sudden it parts and Will steps out and her jaw drops. And he goes over, you know, comes over, gives me a great big hug. And, you know, we chat for a second. I said, Will, I got to introduce you. This is my wife. And I said, this is my wife, Christina. And she stuck out her hand to shake his hand. And he blew right by it, gave her a great big hug.
Oh, that's great. That is great.
And whispered in her ear, I kicked your husband's ass. to which she said, thank you. I was like, what? You don't thank him for kicking? That's eh. So, and then, you know, and we sat and chatted for a little bit. And, you know, she just was losing her mind. And he was like, I'm gonna get back to the party. I'm like, hey, yeah, do your thing. And she's like, okay, we can go home now. And I was like, all right. And I'm still living off the points that I got for introducing Will Smith.
Well, and I got to say, one of my favorite quotes ever from a guest is what you said about Will Smith is like, I was hoping he was going to be everything I thought he was. Like, to me, that just gets to my heart. Like, I'm so happy to hear that. Just for those listening, Will patterned his character after Stone Cold Steve Austin. What I love here, there's two things here. The first of which is what Peter Berg did. This movie opened at a military base a week before it opened universally for everyone to see, or maybe it was just the United States. But regardless, Peter Berg allowed military members to go see this for free a week before it opened. And that just speaks volumes, I think, about Peter Berg. And it just made this wonderful movie that much better for me, Dave.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah,
it was.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say it was a blast because, you know, Jason Bateman was also just fantastic to work with. And so the three of them loved to laugh, and it didn't matter who was doing the thing that made people laugh. And so, you know, that was often became one of my goals was to make them all crack up at some point during the day.
So I'm going to throw this out there, Dave, and I think I read this correctly that you did stand up or you're doing stand up or at some part of your life you've contributed to stand up. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did stand up back in New York for a bit.
Okay, so I want to throw this out there. So the one thing that drives me nuts is I listen to Howard Stern a lot. You know, I love his as an interviewer. He's phenomenal. I have to say, I read where Dave Chappelle was considered for this role. So I have kind of two things to say here. One of which is people keep referring to him as the best stand-up comedian. And I keep having to check with myself. Is Eddie Murphy still alive? Is Bill Burr still alive? Is Chris Rock still alive? Like, I love Dave Chappelle. And two things. I do not believe – I think he's supremely talented, but I do not believe he's the best stand-up comedian. But secondly, like, Will Smith was made to be Hancock. So I guess my question to you is in a roundabout way. One, am I being a little hard on Dave Chappelle? I guess answer that because I don't want to throw too many things at you. But I hear it all the time. Like I feel like I'm an idiot because I don't feel like Dave Chappelle is the best stand-up comedian. And quite truthfully, Dave, I don't even think it's close. Like I think I put Murphy up there. I put Bill Burr up there. It's like, and I can keep going. Yeah. Like, but he's supremely talented, so I don't want to take that away either.
Right. He's absolutely an incredibly talented guy, and I think the best stand-up is based on what you like, and that can also change over time. So, you know, there can be someone who just is right in the groove of what you enjoy, and you know, so like Bill Burr is not for everyone,
right? Right.
But if you like his sense of humor, he's awesome. And so I think you know, anytime anyone uses absolutes like that, it's always. You know, something you could poke a lot of holes in. And that also comes from my engineering background is like, I have a really hard time saying anything in absolutes. So I will even say I almost never use absolutes because even that can't be said absolutely. Anytime you're saying that somebody is the best at something, it's just a blanket thing. It's, there's always, you got to factor in people's, opinions and their tastes.
No, well said. And I read where, you know, Hancock was called an asshole, like, I'm going to say 18 to 20 times in that movie. And I got to tell you, Dave, personally for me, I would consider that a good day.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
I've been there myself. Okay.
Dave, is there a role that, you know, I have a couple more Hancock questions, and I really want to just drop a couple questions about Vince Gilligan. So is there a role that you missed out on that you were very close to that you were like, God damn it, like, I thought I had it. And when you look back, you kind of can't let it go. Is that a thing, or is it like for your sanity, you have to say, you know what, enough. I missed out on it. I know you mentioned their part earlier about you know, it's basically you and people that are very close to you. You have friends that, you know, you guys go for the same roles. But is there a role that you kind of look back at and say, God damn it, that's the one. I wanted that.
Well, yeah, there are parts that I think it's – my memory is healthy in a way. So it's like I remember the good stuff and I kind of filter out the bad stuff eventually. And so as part of that, I eventually get past, you know, certain things like that where I either feel like I should have gotten a part or, you know, it's not very often that I have missed out on a part because of something I have done, that I'm aware of. Those are the ones that are hard for me to let go because there's something I could have done better. But in most cases, I can absolutely rationalize that the casting people or the director have made a horrible mistake by not casting me. And, you know, once you establish that in your head, it's like, oh, they messed up. Aha. You know, so, it's a lot easier to accept, if you just, oh, they're crazy, they're nuts. But a lot of times it's stuff that you have absolutely no control over. And I've said this to young up and coming actors a lot is that, you know, if you don't get something, people talk about the rejection in the industry and it's not really rejection because if you know the reason why, 90% of the time, it's really dumb. I was up for a part in the Underdog movie and, you know, there's a big thug and a little thug. And, you know, my friend Joey Beccaro actually got the part, that I was up for. And, you know, when I didn't get it, I was like, oh, that's a bummer. But the reason why I didn't get it is because they wanted the little guy to be bald and they didn't want the big guy to be bald. And I was like, so the Walt Disney Company can't spring for a wig? Okay. And so, you know, it's like, well, that's a dumb reason, but that's their reason. And it doesn't have anything to do with me personally. So I can't fault that. You know, I had a part in Thor that was going to be a sort of a marquee fight. And the coordinator called me, you know, the night before it was supposed to start shooting. It was supposed to start on Monday. And, you know, this was on a Friday. He called me and I'd already been on it for 4 months doing fight rehearsals and everything else. He called and he was like, well, they want to actually have a black guy do that part. And I was like, oh, okay. And so my friend Jamal Duff did it and, you know, he was already there doing the same, you know, the same stunt rehearsals. And so it was like, you know, that's not something I can do anything about. And, so I can't, you know, I can't be upset about it really. I can be like, well, that's a bummer, but, you know, it doesn't really make sense for me to harbor any kind of anger about it or, you know, that sort of thing. So there are definitely parts that, that I know I haven't gotten for some reason that is completely out of my control. That's the majority of cases. And sometimes parts have changed. You know, there was a TV movie that I can't remember the name of where I was in to play the sheriff and he was supposed to be, you know, he's a bad guy. And the way they described the sheriff was he's a big dude. He's tall. He's over 6'4" ideally. And, you know, he's just a massive guy. If he's got a beard and he's bald, that'd be great. And it said everything except a David Matty type. And I was like, this part's mine. And then I read it and I was like, oh, this is totally mine. And I went in and I did the audition and I scared the crap out of the casting people. And they said as much. And when it was over, I went back to being me, which is that's a tangent I could go down. But I was like, okay, I nailed that thing. And I walked out feeling like I have booked this gig. And the whole weekend I was just riding high and I was like, yeah, I got this thing. And then eventually I didn't get a call and I didn't get a call and I didn't get a call. And turns out I didn't get the part. And so I started kind of doing a little stalking of the project to see if I could figure out who had gotten it, see if it was somebody I knew or whatever. And turns out it went to Terrence Howard.
Well,
who doesn't match anything they were asking for.
No, he is not Dave Matt. No, he is. That's a very different. Yeah, it's yeah.
A very different type.
Yeah. That is. Yeah.
But he obviously said, I'm interested in being a part of this project. And they went, OK, have this part.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's you can't that's obviously something you can't control. And, you know, one of the things I want to say is how, you know, I loved you in Hancock. And I have to also say that, you know, it was written by, for those listening, Vince Gilligan, and your role in the, I will call it the Breaking Bad universe, because it encompasses El Camino. It encompasses, sure. It's a big role. Like, I mean, people like it is huge, you know, and I will say that, is it a coincidence that you're working with Vince here and there, or is it just completely a, you know, was this meant to happen?
Well, I like to think there's some sort of cosmic involvement, but there was actually no connection. I got onto Saul because they were trying to find a huge dude and they were not having success with casting. And so they asked the stunt coordinator, who's a, you know, an old friend of mine, and they said, do you know any big guys? And he's like, yeah, I got this huge dude. And because of him, I was able to go in and read for the casting people, and they were like, oh my God, that's great. And so I ended up with the gig. And what's weird is that character's name is Man Mountain, not Mountain Man
in Hancock,
in Better Call Saul.
Right.
It's Man Mountain.
But I also feel like Hancock, right.
And so I actually got to, when we were shooting El Camino, I actually got to talk to Vince about that. And I said, hey, let me ask you, counting this part, how many characters have you written named Man Mountain? And he was like, well, there was this one, and then there was Hancock. Wait, that was you and Hancock, too. And I was like, yeah. So we had a great chat about it. Just anytime Vince happens to write the character Man Mountain, I think I'm on a short list, but not actually by choice. It's just like a cosmic thing. Like, I am Man Mountain for Vince.
Yeah. So. And I've heard wonderful things about how kind he is. And
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's so
awesome. There's a great scene with you, Mike, and Stephen Ogg. It's a great scene. Those guys are – you guys are all phenomenal in that scene. When you're in a scene like that, you see Stephen, you see Mike. Does it is there – or I should say Jonathan Banks. But is there is there a learning there? Is there like, wow, Jesus Christ, Steven does this really well, or Jonathan does this really well. Like, are you ever like that on set, Dave?
But it's usually, it's gotta be the right circumstance, because most of the time, if you're in the scene, you need to be a little more present with your own character. And so you don't really notice it as much as if you're, perhaps they're shooting in reverse and you're, you know, you get to watch them do their thing. That's when you actually get a chance to do that. But most of the time, you just don't have the opportunity to do that. And then a lot of times you'll see the end result and be like, oh my God, that guy's so good. But I mean, you know, even as we were shooting it, it was so much fun. We all were having just a ridiculous amount of fun. Tom Schnauz was the director. He was one of the EPs on the show. And he wrote that episode as well. And, you know, everybody was having a blast, and it was just so much fun. And what's weird is, like, kind of right out of the gate, first thing in the morning, I met Jonathan, and, he was very nice. And, you know, we met, just sort of introduced each other, and we were waiting. We were sort of hanging out waiting, and I had just done like 2 weeks on a stunt gig. And so I was banged up. And so I started stretching, and I was just kind of stretching my back, and he goes, your back hurt? And having spent 2 weeks with stunt guys, I was like, oh, he's busting my balls. It's 5 a.m. We're in a freaking parking garage in Albuquerque, and already he's busting my balls. And I was like, yeah, I'm just stretching. And he was like, oh, man, standing on the concrete is the worst. I'm so happy I'm going to be sitting in a car tomorrow, because, oh, this will kill you. And I was like, wait a minute. He's not busting my balls. He's genuinely concerned. Yeah. He's genuinely asking about my well-being. And I was like, yeah. And so he pointed out, he goes, look at what all the crew guys are wearing. And I was like, what's that? And he goes, look at their feet. And all the crew guys, they're wearing shorts, and they have these socks that are like knee-high socks. And I thought it was a fashion statement. And he goes, those are compression socks, and they call them magic socks. And I was like, okay. And so I talked to one of the guys about them. And he's like, oh, they're the best. They have them in all different kinds. And you get them for different sports. You can get them for, you know, a cycling type or a CrossFit type or whatever. And so I got myself some socks as a result of talking to Jonathan Banks about my stretching my back. And
Dave, I was going to ask you, I was going to add it to your story. Do they have the new balance dad shoes on the end of those socks? You know the barbecue grill. I got the grill. Don't worry about it.
Sometimes.
So I have to say, you know, I love hearing stuff like that. Like, and you're so kind to many of your castmates here. Are you caught up on a lot of these shows? So like, are you caught up on Breaking Bad before you get to Better Call Saul? Are you caught up on all these shows?
Yeah. Most of the time, there are always times when you, you're on a show that has been going for a while that you haven't been watching. And so that's, when that sort of thing happens, you generally try to at least catch a couple episodes to sort of get the flavor of what it is.
Right. Gotcha.
But in the case of Saul, I was totally up to speed on everything, and I was excited to be there. And
I think Breaking Bad broke my heart with, there's a scene in the desert where Hank's about to lose his life, and he looks up and he says, "You know what? You're the smartest guy I ever met, but you know, he's basically calling him an idiot for not realizing that he made up his mind 10 minutes ago." I mean, the tears start pouring. Very difficult. But you're just such an iconic person in that universe. I have two final questions for you, and thank you so much for all your time. You're just such a wonderful guest.
No problem.
The other thing is, you know, I just saw, speaking of Better Call Saul, I went back to the theater, saw Nobody. Got to say, one of the best, as good as John Wick is, this is just as good. Mm-hmm. I could not believe it.
Awesome.
And I got to say, you know, speaking of stunt people, I can't imagine how many went into this movie. That being said, I said, there's no way I'm going to believe Bob Odenkirk in the same type of role as Keanu Reeves. And holy shit, right. Dave, does he pull it off? Holy shit.
Yeah, he is an amazingly talented guy. And I don't know what sort of turns of fate have sort of, put him in the kind of roles that he's had prior to, you know, Saul, for example. But he can do just a ton of different things, and he's just a really talented guy, and his range has not yet begun to be tapped, I believe. And so he's and he's a nice dude. You know, he had a real good time, on the set and everything else. So he's a good guy.
The last thing I will say is this. I have to say, I read a wonderful article about you going into my research, and I have to say, they were very kind. They're talking about your life and your bio, your career. They mentioned Mensa and, you know, all these wonderful, your filmography and the patents and all these wonderful things. And they said, but he's best known as the guy who gets his head shoved up his ass by Will Smith and Hancock. I'm like, what a way. Like, and it wasn't like satirical, like article. It was like a very serious article. I'm like, who the hell ends an article like that? But I got to say, man, I've laughed a lot in movies. I do not think I've laughed as much as I did in that scene. And it was just like my dad passed, you know, within the last couple of years. And I have to say, we loved that scene. It was just so wonderful. And like, thank you for doing that, like for us. And
it was absolutely my pleasure. It was a really weird scene to shoot. And what's really funny about that scene is that there are people online who are complaining about how bad the CG is in that shot, and there's no CG.
Also, PG-13, but BTW. Like, come on. Like, I mean, what do they want? How much more graphic can it get?
Right. And the way we did that shot was I was in somewhat baggy sweats, and they cut a panel out of the back. So my ass was out, and gave me this little dance belt to wear. And Matrix, who was the guy who was the head, who absolutely had the worst end of the deal, stuck his head through the hole in between my legs and grabbed onto my thighs and shrugged his shoulders up against my butt as much as he could, and then held on. And we both sort of were pushing each other back and forth as we were, you know, sort of struggling. And it was 3 hours doing that. with just my ass sweat on his neck. And I mean, he absolutely had the worst part of that gig, but yeah, it was a tremendously, fun, shoot entirely, but it was one of the weirdest things I'd done and one of the most fun. And that's the thing that, you know, people, when Hancock comes up, invariably someone will be like, "Oh, you were in Hancock?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what'd you do?" It's like, "Well, I was the tallest guy in the movie." "No, I don't remember." "I shot Charlize at the end with a shotgun." "No, I don't remember that either." "Got a head shoved up my ass." "Oh, yeah."
But that's the other thing, Dave. Like, people forget, like, you've got a kind of, like, and I said this at the beginning of the interview, you kind of have a big role in this movie, right? So it's not just that scene and done, right? Like, you come back at the end. It's a pivotal moment. It's a very dramatic moment. So there's a lot to be said for that, Dave.
Yeah.
You know,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just feel like, and you know, I have to say, it's just a wonderful scene. Before I let you go, any projects you wanted to get out there, anything you want to throw out there? You've given me so much of your time, such a fan of your work. Anything you want to throw out there now?
Well, thanks. Actually, there's something that I've done that is going to be airing in December of this year. It will start, and I can't talk about it, but it's super exciting, and I'm super jazzed about it. I can't wait for it to come out so I can see how it turned out. But it's epic. It's a big deal.
Dave, I thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And, you're a good human being. You're a wonderful actor, wonderful stuntman, good human being. And again, thank you so much, Dave.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks for having me. And, I'd love to come back sometime.